Good evening, everybody. Welcome back to STM Live. We are back on our normal Wednesday rotation. So thank you for bearing with us through all the schedule fluctuations. And thank you for being back. Hello to our returning listeners and viewers, first-time viewers, people who are just walking by in the next room and happen to hear this. This is for you. We have a couple of things to shout out at the top of the hour. American Werewolves 2, The Skinwalkers, is coming, finally, on March the 15th. You'll be able to catch it on your streaming platform of choice, on most VOD services, and you can head over to shop.smalltownmonsters.com to pre-order your physical copy right now. The next big thing we got to talk about is Monster Fest 2, which is happening on June 29th in downtown Canton, Ohio. You can get your tickets at sdmmonsterfest.com and meet all of our amazing guests like Shannon LeGros and Lyle Blackburn and Jim Harold and a bunch of other people I can't remember right now because I can only remember three things. We have a new episode of The Lore You Know featuring Tyler Hall. Tyler is somebody who recently started hanging out with the STM crew. He's making his directorial debut later this year, but you can get to know him right now in the new episode of The Lore You Know, hosted by Heather Mosier. Let's see, couple more things. We had some technical difficulties a little bit ago, guys, so our guest is on the way here. But in the meantime, if you haven't checked it out yet, you can see the first episode of Strange Places, the new show from Alexander Petikoff, which is available right now on YouTube. And there's a ton of other things going on in the world, guys, but we're not here to go over all of the things. We're here to talk to tonight's guest, who is now with us, and I believe we will be able to hear this time. You know him from several Small Town Monsters productions. It would take me too long to name them all. You can see him in several upcoming ones, but please welcome back to STM Live, Mr. Mark Matzke.
Hello there. How's that?
Good. I can hear you this time.
Hooray.
I think I know what happened, but we can talk about that later.
All right.
Mark, how are you?
Hey, I'm doing fantastic, actually. Still coming down from a week ago and some of the top secret stuff going on in Canton. Yeah. It's not that top secret. I mean, we put it out there a little bit.
We did post about it on social media.
Yeah.
Yeah. For anyone who doesn't know, Mark and I just spent two consecutive days doing exactly what we're going to do during this conversation tonight right now. So, we're going to go over every note from that. It's going to take about 16 hours.
Yeah, that's about right. I saved them all, so we can go that route if you want.
I've got them. They're in the next room. I'll be right back. No, but if you hadn't seen it on social media, folks, we did just wrap filming season one of UFOs Revisited, which Mark and I both participated in. So we've had a lot of practice talking about UFOs over the last couple of weeks. I do want to shout out our new members right at the top of the hour. Matt Joyce, I believe I've seen Matt in the chat before. I could be wrong, but I think I'm not. And 145, 145, 145, the digits 145. Welcome. It's a dope username. Thank you for joining the squad. We appreciate you. You make what we do possible. So as always, please drop your questions and comments in the chat. I do see a couple comments already. I'm going to go ahead and star these, and we will get to them very, very shortly. But for now, I do want to set the stage. We're talking UFOs tonight, the most recent release of On the Trail of UFOs. And I've got to ask you right off the top of the hour, Mark.
Yeah.
There has been a lot of stuff happening in the UFO world over the last couple of years. Mm-hmm. And you've been involved in, strange stuff or being interested in strange stuff for a really long time. So I'm curious if your perspective has evolved or changed at all, from, say, 10 years ago to where you stand right now on this stuff.
That's a really cool question. And the thing about it is, I think I would have to say my viewpoint has not meaningfully changed over that decade. For me, it hit an all new level in the mid 1990s because a couple things sort of converged. I mean, one was Area 51 becoming a known quantity in sort of the mass media, just becoming more and more prevalent. And I'm not kidding when I say then another part to this is in the fall of 1994, I started to become a real true blue fan of The X-Files in its second season. I passed by the first season somehow, so I started getting into it season two. And what I bring that up because I think what X-Files triggered was a wave of publishing to sort of accompany the show about the show itself, and then real life UFO cases. Area 51 again was rising to prominence. And at the same time that all of that was happening, a seminary professor, believe it or not, recommended that I read a book entitled Operation Trojan Horse by John Keel, which I did. And that probably, it was that period of time where my interest, my understanding, such as it is, of UFO phenomena really kind of took off and had gained a new momentum. And I guess to this day, I would say that if you had to pigeonhole me as far as what do I think about UFOs, etc., I probably, if you have ever read Operation Trojan Horse and sort of have a feel for John Keel's outlook on this, it points in that direction for me personally. So I think what all the things that have transpired over the past, you know, 2-3 years have been really interesting, but I think my viewpoint on it is pretty, I wouldn't say set in stone, because you wouldn't want that to happen, but the timing for me is just skews a little bit earlier.
I see that. Yeah. I think I'm with you on that. I had a kind of a certain way of thinking about it for a long time. And then, you know, some of the disclosure stuff started happening and I was like, oh, now I kind of think this. And then
yeah,
we had some very interesting conversations while filming UFOs Revisited. Now I think some different things. So It's not my intent to tease that throughout this whole show, but you know, your perspective, it changes, it evolves as new information comes. And I don't know why my voice just cracked like that.
it's just an emotional situation. Yes. Yeah.
I just can't believe there's stuff in the sky. couple of audience questions I'd like to get to because they're going to be fun. Bruce Owings says, can I get a shout out? You absolutely can, Bruce. Thank you for watching. Thank you for asking for a shout out. I'm not being sarcastic. Thank you.
Yeah,
you
Bruce.
Absolutely can. Welcome. Yes. Thank you for hanging out. I'd also like to welcome Andy Heinrich, who says, found this channel a few weeks ago. Good stuff. Thank you, Andy. Props for one, having a gnome as your profile picture, and two, being named Andy. I understand there are some cool people with that name.
Yeah.
In addition to Mr. Heinrich, Nick has a question that I'm excited to answer. This will be fun, Mark. You got to help me out with this one. You can probably answer it better than I can. But Nick asks, okay, so what is it that you guys exactly do as a group? Small Town Monsters is an independent film company. We specialize in documentaries about cryptids and the paranormal. We've covered hauntings. We've covered UFOs. We produce long form documentaries that are released kind of theatrically, and also we self-distribute them. That's actually our main thing. We self-distribute our stuff. And then we also have a lot of content that's available on YouTube. So we also produce podcasts and we have books, but I'm sure Mark can provide a better explanation.
Well, no, I mean, that really gives a good thumbnail sketch of the whole scene. What Small Town Monsters, I think behind it all is a very genuine desire to document eyewitness cases and stories before the people who've had those experiences are no longer with us. And what's been interesting over the last 9 or 10 years that STM has been in existence is that we have noticed that's starting to happen, and with greater frequency. One example simply would be with the Flatwoods Monster and the brothers who were part of the gang that saw the Flatwoods Monster in the 1950s, went on camera with Seth, and his dad, actually, Ronnie, was instrumental in getting Ed and Fred May to talk to us. And if I'm not mistaken, one of them's passed away, at least. I'm not sure if both of them are still with us or not, but it's sort of the drive to preserve these stories for generations to come before they just get lost in the dustbin of history and stop being told in families and things like that. So that's sort of the I guess the heart of it is to get these stories recorded and documented and get them out to a wider audience.
Mark has been a part of Small Town Monsters since the jump. I've just been nipping at Seth's heels like a chihuahua the last couple of years, and he finally let me in the house. So, but no, STM also, and I'll just say this as someone who was a fan for a long time and still is, fosters a lot of creativity in the community. I meet a lot of other people who will say the same thing I say, like, yeah, Small Town Monster stuff inspired me to start researching these things and taking an interest in them. So, I could go on for a long time about what Small Town Monsters is and what we do, but thank you for asking that question, Nick. I hope that is helpful to you. Nick has a follow-up comment. Flatwoods Monster, never heard of that one. Google it, my friend. Check it out. Highly recommend it. Check out the Small Town Monsters documentary on it, which I believe is on Amazon right now, I think.
Yeah, your guess is as good as mine.
It's on different places than it was before. Google Small Town Monsters, Flatwoods Monster. Watch that documentary. I guarantee you're going to enjoy it. So here's another question I have for you, Mr. Matsky.
I'm just going
to pull up my phone because I can't remember the order I wanted to ask these in.
All right.
Is there a recurring aspect of UFO phenomena that you find particularly fascinating? And that, I realize that's a really open-ended, broad question. It's meant to be.
But. Yes. There's a handful of things that I could mention. The one that immediately popped into my mind as you asked the question today is, again, this kind of dovetails with what you said before about our UFOs Revisited conversation stirred up some ideas and new perspectives. And one thing that definitely occurred to me as a result of getting ready for that production and in the conversations that we had was the prevalence of those with a UFO experience or are reporting a UFO experience who had some sort of background with the United States Air Force. And that's the recurring part of the question that you ask. The recurring feature is that people having experiences or reporting them, they're, at least in the cases that we talked about, if we're looking to connect the dots, those were definitely dots that were there. And, you know, naming names, for example, Len Kasten, who reported and wrote the book on Project Serpo, was United States Air Force for a time. And while he was in the Air Force, had his own UFO experience that he ended up interpreting as an abduction. Fife Symington, the governor of Arizona at the time of the Phoenix Lights, and who got in a lot of hot water for treating that in sort of a flippant way at first. He was United States Air Force for a time. Charles Hall, the author of Millennial Hospitality, who has a lot of things to say about his experiences at Nellis Air Force Base, was Air Force, Project Moondust, Air Force. I mean, we could just continue to do this. And I don't have any necessarily conclusions about that, except to say that if we're looking for through lines, the United States Air Force and people spending time in service, not necessarily career men, but having a couple years service in their background, there just seems to be some sort of connective tissue that's there that I really think is worth further exploration.
Awesome, man. I knew you were going to have like the most insightful answers to anything I asked you, but yeah, no, I'm with you on that. And it almost seems like an inevitability with regard to the Air Force, right? Because they're the ones literally in the sky.
Exactly. On one hand, it seems like a super basic answer, but on the other hand, I think it's not necessarily limited to the observations that would be done, you know, in flight, but also it raises questions about the men themselves and what other experiences they may have had, either voluntarily or not, you know, and that's as far as I really want to take that right now. But I think that when you have so many cases honestly, some of the most outlandish cases that are on the record, and there's an Air Force person kind of at the center of that, it just raises all sorts of questions.
Hmm. Yeah, no, it really does. It really does. Metallica 4567, I see your question. I see you dropping the bomb on us. We're going to get to that, but I'm saving it for a few minutes. So I just want you to know that if anybody saw the question that our friend Metallica asked. our friend Mark Morris, who has also been around since the first Kickstarter, has a couple questions for us. Great to see you, Mark. Was excited to see what the Kickstarter will bring this year. Proud backer from the very first. Three questions. Which upcoming project are you each most excited for? Will On the Trail of UFOs be a continuing series? And what is Andy up to these days? Well, I'll go ahead and I'll go ahead and knock one of those out real quick. On the Trail of UFOs is coming back. Yes, that is in the works behind the scenes. So watch this space. As far as projects, man, for what's coming up this next year that's been announced, I'm extremely excited about Unexplained TV, just because that's going to make our content more accessible. And I like that. As productions, I can't wait for Lost Contact. Like, I'm all about UFOs right now. I've always been fascinated by the Thomas Mantell incident. I cannot wait to see that movie. And I haven't, like, Mark and I don't see the movies, you know, as they're being made, because, you know, we're a little bit behind the scenes. We see them maybe a little bit before you guys do, but generally we see them when they come out. So I'm very stoked on that one. And I'll let Mark take it from here, especially that last question.
All right. Yeah. Yeah. Well, I'll do question two also. I have to say I am very excited to see UFOs Revisited get out there and see what kind of reception it gets, largely because of the chemistry of the panel that we had. You know, we came together and we had never really, at all, as that group, done anything before. And we immediately fell into kind of a rhythm and a complementary sort of relationship. I hope that will translate well onto the screen and make that compelling viewing. So I'm excited to see the finished product there.
I was thinking about this today. I'm sorry to cut off, but since you said it, like, if we had had a live audience for that filming and it went the way it went, that would have been fine. So I'm excited to see that get out there. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
But sorry.
Okay. And what Andy is up to these days, he is working in nearby town. He is doing, he works at a hydraulic system manufacturing plant. He is overseeing one of the departments there. And at the same time, he is doing a lot of self-education, waiting for the right time to take things to the next level as far as his education is concerned. And that's what he's up to. It's a really interesting situation. I have to give him a lot of credit. He did not want to go to college without knowing exactly why he was going. And there's a lot of wisdom there that I would have liked to had at age 19. But
same.
Yeah. But thanks for asking. He's really doing very well. I'd say he's flourishing right now.
Thank you for all of those questions, Mr. Mark. Mr. Morris. Thank you, Mark. We got two Marks right now, so I'm trying to discriminate. But no, thank you for those questions, Mark. Really, really appreciate it. Some really interesting discourse in the chat right now on the topic of disclosure. So let's go through some of these comments. I just want to make sure they're on the audio record here. Our friend Tom Talker 2000 from last week, we were talking at the last show. My uncle is retired Air Force colonel and aunt a lieutenant. She's also a retired ATF agent. And when I asked them about the whole subject matter, they put their finger to their mouth like, quiet. Ooh, that's a very interesting anecdote. pardon me. Our new friend Nick, who's been hanging out tonight, says UFO or UAP is the big thing right now, especially with the government slowly declassifying things. Not only that, the stuff that's going on in Congress with it, not to bring in political stuff, but you're right, Nick. This is being discussed in Congress, you know, and it's interesting. It's a very, if you follow the proceedings, it's a very bipartisan discussion. You have people from both sides of the aisle weighing in on the issue, and that's very interesting. It's interesting how this issue appeals to people across spectrums. I think that's worth worth talking about. So thanks for mentioning that, Nick. Mm-hmm. Our friend Scott, your boy Scott, when we were talking about UFOs Revisited, said really looking forward to that series. And Tom Talker 2000 continues, no, we will never see full disclosure, not from our government, that's for sure. I don't get it. Maybe you're right, man. That's a question we're going back and forth on continuously. Mm-hmm. Grady McNutt says, howdy from North Texas. I am in Southeast Texas. Grady, thank you for attending. And Vincent Ellison says, what's in the mug? It is iced coffee. I'm trying to see. Oh. You see that? It's actually Reese's flavored iced coffee, but I've got it in my Roswell Museum UFO mug. So anyway, Okay. I think it's time. Oh, and Gil Favor, that was the other question or comment I'd highlighted. I don't think we'll ever see full disclosure in our lifetime. There is too much at risk. That's a very interesting comment with multiple dimensions to it. But I've been saving a comment here for a few minutes. I wanted to make sure we had plenty of time to talk about it. Our friend 4567. Who is a regular viewer, regular commenter, asks, do you believe Richard Doty?
Yeah, that is the question, is it not?
It is. I feel like I should have brought Micah for this one because you guys could have gone around all night, but please.
Yeah,
please
we could have. I think here's what I'll say about Richard Doty. I mean, his stated job and what he openly talked about after the fact was that he was feeding all sorts of disinformation to all sorts of people. And the question becomes, at what point do you believe the person who said, I've been lying? I don't know the answer to that question. I can tell you that when he's very good at what he does. There's recordings of him talking about his career that still exist. They're all out there. One of my go-tos is Coast to Coast AM archives, and he was on with Art Bell and Greg Bishop. Very interesting show. And Richard Doty comes across as very matter of fact and even somewhat, not ashamed, I would say, but somewhat remorseful over the fact that his job was to lie to people. And that's how he frames it, you know, in those subsequent conversations with Art Bell. And you know, Art Bell being who he was, just puts it right to Doty, essentially saying, you know, how does it feel being tasked with lying to your fellow countrymen? And Doty just came back with saying something like, well, that was my job.
And I do see a like couple that. Comments asking who Richard Doty is. So I should explain.
Uh-huh.
Correct me if I'm wrong here, Mark, because you're smarter than me. Richard Doty is a man who alleges to be a former government agent who was tasked with spreading misinformation about UFOs, basically to distract from any real findings that people might be picking up. He would feed fake information to UFO researchers. So that way, any legitimate data they had got mixed up with a bunch of nonsense. And it's purported that he's the root of several notorious UFO stories and rumors that we won't spend a ton of time going into tonight. Mm-hmm. But that's Richard Doty in a nutshell. Everything Mark said makes a lot more sense in that context. Mm-hmm. Nick says, I got you. Okay, a professional liar. That's what he purports to be exactly. So yeah, go ahead, Mark. Sorry.
Yeah, well, I mean, the only fly in the ointment is the fact that he came out later and said, I was lying then, but I'm not now. Well, how do you have a choice. You either trust him from that point on or you take everything that he says with a grain of salt. And I think the grain of salt is probably the wiser approach there.
I'm going to go really meta on it. And I actually kind of think this, the more I think about this stuff, at least in some cases, what if Doty thinks he's telling us the truth, but he himself has been the victim of some form of misinformation campaign. What if some of the information, I don't know how that would work out, but I don't think in these situations where you have these let's just follow the narrative. Okay. I'm not saying what's true or what's not, but in these situations where you have these government operations where information is very compartmentalized, we know that not everybody is supposed to have the full picture. So maybe he didn't necessarily do what he says he did but he believes that. And I haven't done it. Now I feel stupid. I haven't done enough research on Doty to talk about that in any more detail, but that's just something I've started thinking about with these former government people coming forward with their startling revelations. Like, maybe they themselves have been misled. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
That's kind of where I'm trying to go.
Sure. I mean, where does it stop? That's a really valid question. And I think in the case of Doty, what he was dealing with, you know, if he had any conscience at all, was the fact that one of the men that he fed disinformation to, named Paul Benowitz, and that's a whole story. Again, as Aaron said, Google it. And if you, you know, want to be slightly depressed and watch somebody's, you know, ultimate downfall take place, Benowitz ended up in a mental institution because he was convinced of the type of things that Doty was feeding him were true, and that there was a vast cover-up of alien activity. And Doty, I think, was trying to do, let's just for the sake of the conversation, say that he was being genuine when he came out later and said, this is what I used to do. He would have been dealing with some guilt, I would hope, at having participated in the breakdown of this other human being, fellow member of, fellow citizen of the United States.
I just can't imagine doing that for a living, you know, like, manipulating people to the point, literally to the point of madness. Like,
right.
It makes you wonder, again, let's say he's telling the truth. Let's say that, you know, this really was a government thing that he was doing. What, how many other agents were there, and how many other people had their lives ruined that we don't know about?
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's frightening.
Yeah. It is. It sure is. And I think in the interview that I heard, he was asked, how many people have you done this to? And it was somewhere in the neighborhood of 3 to 5, which is really too much. to five is too many, in my opinion.
Yeah. Like, one is too many, but like 3 to 5 plus all their families, all their friends, like, there's ripple effects, you
there
know,
is.
When you destroy someone's life. So,
mm-hmm.
Ugh. Ugh. Vincent Ellison has a fun comment. Pay me to lie. I do. Yeah. Well put.
Yes.
A modern proverb of our time. I like that.
Mm-hmm.
I like that. Joe Purdue says, I take everything from Doty with a grain of salt. It feels kind of like taking Bigfoot advice from a very well-known hoaxer. Yeah. Interesting take. Yeah. Like Mark said, it's hard when he comes back later and says, I wasn't lying before. I was lying before, but I'm not lying now.
But
and I was
not,
lying
now.
It's hard. Mm-hmm. Lies cancel each other out. Does it work that way? I don't know. Talking about Art Bell, Lawrence Haley says Art was the best. I listened to Art from the beginning. Yeah. Legend. Mm-hmm. I noticed recently, if anyone likes narrative fiction podcasts in the paranormal realm, that there are dozens of shows that are just inspired by Coast to Coast AM. Like, the premise is basically that the protagonist is the host of a show like Coast to Coast, and they get drawn into the real paranormal world. It's becoming a trope. It's pretty cool just to see how art influenced not only researchers and writers and filmmakers, but now it's all this fiction that's springing from the work he did. I think that's really neat. I think that's neat.
Yeah.
Let's see. We had a few other cool comments here. Lawrence did ask also a little while ago, have you seen the footage Justin did at Mountain Beast Mysteries? I have not. I'm not entirely... I do not know that. I'm sorry. You can email it to me, though, aaron@smalltownmonsters.com, and I will check it out. Speaking of misinformation and disclosure, Joe Purdue has another interesting comment. I'm loving the comments tonight, guys. This is fun. Pretty sure we're on a set timeline, and the reins have been taken out of the government's hands, and something is coming that they just can't cover up. That's an interesting, that's an interesting idea. What do you think about that, Mark?
Well, I mean, that would be, I think that would obviously be the disclosure that most people in some way hope is going to happen, which is to say it would all be manifestly obvious, you know, at that point, if the something that's coming is, you know, the fleet appearing in the sky, or, you know, an alien walking across the White House lawn that everybody always talks about.
Some combination of the day the earth stood still and Independence Day.
Yeah, no, right, exactly. Yeah, I mean, and that's the idea has typically been and still is, I think, is the principle behind disclosure is people can't handle the truth of the matter, whatever it is. And at this point, it's very hard to even know what that might be. What is the truth of the matter? But the principle of disclosure says whoever's keeping a lid on that information is making the decision that most of us cannot handle it, whatever it is. Mm-hmm. And I think when you are this far into the topic, the idea of it being out of the government's hands and inevitably going to be revealed, there's something to like about that. Mm-hmm. Whatever happens after that, who knows? But I guess what it comes down to is if you are seeking the truth, it seems to me that that is what would have to happen for us to really know it, is for it to be out of, you know, burst out of the box that it's in.
Yeah, that's an interesting thought, because we've had this conjecture for a really long time that the government obviously knows all of this stuff, and now we have more former government agents seemingly confirming that. But there's been these rumors that information is slowly seeded out to the public to get us ready to inoculate us essentially against whatever the big thing is that's coming. So what if there's a big ship on the way to Earth and they haven't told us about it and they know it's going to show up? What are we going to do, guys? Mm-hmm. Let's show them the Navy footage. We'll start with that.
Yeah.
that Grush guy, he's about to blow the whistle, right? Let's just let that happen. Don't shoot him. No one shoot him.
Mm-hmm.
You know? Oh man, I take a humorous approach to this stuff, but I'm actually overwhelmed with fascination. Yeah. I'm really excited about what's mm-hmm. happening right now. Tom Talker 2000 has another interesting comment. Where did that technology come from? Or why does the B-2 bomber look a little too much like the triangle UFO people saw during the Phoenix Lights incident? So I think what Tom is suggesting, maybe, and correct me if I'm wrong, Tom, but that maybe some of the technology that we are using and that we do see has an extraterrestrial, more exotic route. I love that idea. What's your take there, Mark?
Well, I think that's compelling. That's one thing that clearly our technological advances have continuously curved upwards, you know, and the curve is tighter and tighter all the time. Forward leaps, whether those were given or back engineered, I mean, there seems to be a point at which we went from, you know, B-2s to triangular craft and things of that nature. I would say, you know, let's not cut us completely short, just as human beings at our creative best. But at the same time, it does beg the question that's really being asked here, and especially the Phoenix Lights. Anytime you bring up Phoenix Lights, there's tons of side trails you could go down with that.
Yeah. Well, we already mentioned, you know, Mayor Fife a little while ago.
Yeah.
It's one of those cases that, like, if you talk about UFOs long enough, we seem to end up back at it, you know, like all roads lead to Roswell, like all roads also seem to lead to the Phoenix Lights, but that's just an idea I had. But yeah, and that's something Bob Lazar talked about too, you know, that there's technology in the hands of the government that's now of extraterrestrial origin, and it's slowly leaking its way out. One of the things he described that when you hear his story today doesn't sound so fascinating is like a palm reading scanner that would unlock doors. That sounds incredible. But we have that technology in our cell phones now, you know.
Yeah,
they phased out the thumbprint reader. Like, we're not even using that anymore. It's all Face ID. So this idea of biometrics in the 80s, when Bob Lazar first showed up on the scene, that was really crazy and exotic. But now it's not a big deal. So did some of that technology come from beyond human science? I don't know. But like, I agree with you too. I think we when we go too far down that road, we tend to discount human ingenuity, like the idea that the aliens built the pyramids. Well, isn't it a lot cooler if people built the pyramids? Mm. Like, yeah. Isn't that more impressive? It is to me.
It's pretty wild. But
I think it's a great and interesting question. And I personally, I hope it's true. I like the idea that my iPhone has alien technology in it. Yeah. That's just fun for me. That's a fun idea. Our friend Samwise Gamgee, another regular viewer and commenter, a astronomy vlog that veers into this subject is Event Horizon. The host has done interviews with U.S. congressmen on the committee doing the investigation and trying to break the firewall of silence. So that could be a good research resource for anyone who is interested. Always like to share those. And Joe Perdue says, quote, "I can't talk about Roswell," quote, David Grush. So I missed the part where he said that, but I do believe that that could be something he said. So I don't know. I'm a believer in Roswell. I will break the fourth wall on that one. Mr. Dollar Store Gloves asks, Mark, what are your three most compelling civilian UFO sightings? Gee. Yeah, that's a weak question from me on this show. Nah, man, three, that's an intense one. You're bringing the heat tonight, Mr. Dollar Store Gloves.
Yeah, that's not a weak question at all. I mean, Well, what I'll say, let me start here, and we've been talking about it a little bit for the past couple of minutes, and that is Phoenix Lights. That would certainly be a civilian sighting, right? I mean, in fact, hundreds, if not thousands of people, civilians, normal people.
That counts.
Saw a pretty inexplicable event. And the thing that has been occurring to me ever since we have been talking about Phoenix Lights since last week is the fact that the length of the sighting was such that people could kind of call their friends and say, hey, this is happening, go outside on your deck right now and tell me if you see what I see. And we don't have a whole lot of those in the literature or in the experience. So that I find that to be very compelling, and it keeps celebrating all kinds of anniversaries, which just makes me feel old because I remember when the Phoenix Lights happened. Secondly, I would say Betty and Barney Hill for if you know, the 1960s sighting, interracial couple, New Hampshire. This is in a way the beginnings of what popularly has become known as the abduction phenomena. And there's all sorts of things converging in this case, including the use of hypnosis as a way of retrieving memories, and brings up all sorts of issues regarding that and so forth. And then the third, you know, I don't know. You could just fill in the blank with so many civilian sightings that are compelling. There's one, and I continuously forget the name of this. It's pretty striking, so I shouldn't forget it. But there was a sighting that a missionary had of a craft that came down and had sort of a ring around the middle of the craft, and they saw what apparently either inside, or if I'm remembering the story correctly, a door opened in the side and beings came out and waved at the missionary and the people who were standing around watching this, and they waved back. There was some sort of interaction between those. And what I know of missionaries is that they typically don't try to invent UFO tales, much less talking about beings that drive UFOs having an interaction. So that's compelling to me, and I'll have to go look up the name of that after the fact, but those are three that I would put forward.
Yeah, I'll corroborate that. I've met a few missionaries in my day. I spent a lot of time in the church, you know, when I was younger, and none of
there
them
it
ever
is. Yeah.
told me about a UFO sighting, none of them. Mm-hmm. So, Joe Perdue has that, says Gill sighting, Anglican missionaries. Interesting, mm-hmm. interesting. Mm-hmm. The Anglican, that's a very traditional belief system, you know, even within the realm of Christianity. So, mm-hmm. you know, you're talking about folks who are probably even less likely. mm-hmm. Even less likely. I met a few kids in youth group who might have made up a UFO.
I would have been one of those kids.
Shout out to all my former church camp folks. Oh man, I've always been fascinated by the Cash Landrum sighting because mm-hmm. you know, you had physical, that's a sighting wherein three civilians witnessed a very large craft, diamond shaped craft, shooting flames, mm-hmm. and they were exposed essentially to radiation poisoning, and it's mm-hmm. You know, long and involved saga, but it's very interesting because these were again very religious people. When they first saw this thing, the description they gave was, "Oh, I thought it was Jesus." You know, mm-hmm. so kind of giving you a frame of reference, not someone who's likely to go and just make a UFO sighting.
Right.
And then another case I really love is the Caracas Dwarves, which took place in Caracas, Venezuela in the 50s.
Yeah.
You're encouraged to seek out more on that case at your leisure, but that's a very interesting one where multiple civilians encountered a strange craft and the strange occupants of that craft. And then three. I know he asked you, but I really like this question. So
that's a fun question. Yeah,
it is. Yeah. Yeah, I guess I also I'm going to subvert the Phoenix Lights a little bit. The Lubbock Lights, which is a similar case in Texas, which also took place in the 50s, where in a large triangular craft or triangular formation of craft was seen and was also photographed. So, you know, great question, Mr. Dollar Store Gloves. Thank you.
Yeah, it's
apologies. Fun. Apologies for hijacking it. Metallica 4567 asks, have you guys seen the new footage of UFO in Ukraine? I have not. I have not heard about this.
No, I haven't either.
I did hear when the unfortunately still ongoing war in Ukraine broke out that there were UFOs being seen. And I did see a few clips that purported to be that. They were kind of sus to me. They looked like they might have been retouched or, you know, of course, this is the modern era. So we're talking about drones, stealth helicopters, any number of things that could be moving around in the sky. But I have not seen any recent compelling reports, Metallica. So feel free to send those my way, Aaron at smalltownmonsters.com. Very interested in that. Let's see. Checking the comments. Lawrence Haley emailed me that video. Thank you, Lawrence. I will check that out very shortly. Not right now, because my computer will crash if I do it right now. Rick Escobar has an interesting question for us. Rick is a squad member. Thank you, Rick. Do you think religion is why there is no disclosure? Ooh. I asked that like it was a casual question, but it's not.
No, I actually love that question. This goes back to the days when Monsteropolis podcast was still hard at it. And Seth and I did a show once. It may have been our finest hour ever of podcasting at any time.
Ever.
Yeah, ever. And it was, we did our best to try to think about what would really happen should actual disclosure take place, or even the type of event that was mentioned before happens that's out of the government's hands. And it just becomes completely obvious to all of the reality of people, beings, entities from other worlds. And one of the things that I personally took it on myself to do is go into some sort of study of, has this been talked about among people of faith? And as it turns out, it definitely has. And in fact, a number of in-depth polls have been taken, academic polls of people of faith across religious lines, asking them these type of direct questions, such as, if aliens were discovered to be true, would that do damage to your faith? And personally, I was surprised to learn that the vast majority of religious people answered with a very firm no, it would not do anything to my faith. In fact, it might even enhance it, in the sense that what it would reveal in those moments is that there were worlds beyond our own. And if God is the creative force that we believe him to be, then what's to prevent him from creating life anywhere, at any time, in any place? So that was one thing that I was able to bring into the conversation. And this was corroborated in other polls and in other conversations that various studies have done, is that it would not necessarily cause damage to those who are faithful. And in fact, it sounds almost like a joke, but in the Roman Catholic Church, very serious theological study has been done regarding, if an alien did show up, should he or it or whatever, should it be baptized? And they weren't really even sort of tongue-in-cheek dealing with that. I from looking it over, it was a very sincere question that was being addressed. And so all of that is to say, the biggest problem, of course, is that if the aliens arrived and then started saying,
you know, the who you thought was God is really us. Now you would have you'd have a lot of unrest. But even so, I don't think that that would damage the people, you know, a faith perspective as much as get people ready for a shift in a different direction as far as what religious faith would now mean. But so I guess that's a long-winded question, but it kind of deserves that sort of piece by piece look. But the essential answer, I think, is no. The question, as it has been dealt with publicly, has come back pretty decisively on that. That it would just be an enhancement of a life of faith.
I tend to agree with you. Even C.S. Lewis wrote, you know, his space trilogy, which I, you know, I found some original copies of. I haven't read it, but I have, you know, where he speculated about, you know, the idea of faith on other planets and beings from other worlds and how that fits in. So even in works of fiction, that's something that's been tossed around. I do think that you know, there are people in religion who have ulterior motives, who are not there to do good things. And this is not a comment on any religion or denomination or faith system. This is based on my own experiences. There is a minority of people who use religion as a control mechanism who would probably be bothered by that, because it would encourage people to ask questions and look at faith in a different way. But I think people would represent a minority, and I don't think that would, you know, prevent people from opening their minds about this stuff. And I don't think it would prevent any form of disclosure in the sense of information continuing to be shared and discussed. That's a great question, Rick. Thank you.
It is.
Love that. Joe Perdue is also bringing the great questions and comments tonight. Says, when I was an active pastor, I addressed it with our congregation, and the reception was really open compared to what I was concerned about going in. Only a few said that they were demons. That's pretty good. Depending on, you know, how big the church is, you know, only a few people thinking they're demons is really good. So, well, that's good either way. But yeah, it's interesting. And even the comment at the end there, maybe a little tongue in cheek, but there are people who would take that perspective as well, who would be like, this is a very negative thing. This is threatening my entire worldview. So such an interesting line of speculation.
Yeah, it is. And I think my own experience has been that people are very open to talking about it. And they've, you know, in church situations, there's been a hesitancy, a reluctance, certainly. But when people have found out what I'm interested in as well, that opens doors to having conversations about things that essentially they didn't think they could talk to anybody about. And that's always a good thing. And as far as the whole demonology end of this, you know, I am not, in my responses, I'm not saying that I don't think that there cannot be some dark side to this. I absolutely do think that there can be a deceptive quality that I'm not, when I say that, I don't mean that explains everything that happens under the UFO banner, but I certainly think that certain individuals, this could be a problem for, and, you know, darker spiritual entities could indeed use this against people to dissuade and discourage them and drive them into sort of a place of despair. So that is something to also be cognizant of. And what's interesting is that other writers have ended up in a very similar situation. And here, again, I'm thinking of John Keel, for example, who, to my knowledge, was never writing from a sort of Christian worldview standpoint. And yet he arrives at a very similar conclusion that sometimes these phenomena can be used against people to really, for nefarious purposes, let's say.
Well, we see encounters, and I'm not going to say that any UFO encounters that might fall in this category, oh, well, those were demons. But, you know, along that same line, we do see encounters that in a lot of cases have lasting negative impacts on people. You know, it's not often that you hear about somebody coming away from one of these sightings being like, oh, I feel great. Things are awesome. Things are great. At least when we're talking about close encounters, like, you know, some of the more dramatic cases we think of. So, you know, some of the evidence would seem to indicate that, or at least point in that direction, that there is a negative aspect there. Yeah. Man, there are so many layers to this, like just this sub thing. I'm so glad that we're getting to do a series of discussions on this show about UFOs, because we're getting into some deep territory. On the topic of deep territory, Tom Talker says, I will always believe that God has limitless creation, and to think we're the only beings in this extremely vast galaxy just would be total ignorance on our part. I think aliens will enhance us. I love that optimistic take on that, Tom. Thank you for that. All right. So I'm making sure I haven't missed any comments here because they're coming in hot tonight. Mr. Dollar Store Glove says, I like the Falcon Lake incident myself. That is a particularly fascinating one. That's another case where someone is left with physical damage after encountering one of these craft. Jeez. Well, we are coming up towards the end of the hour, guys. If you have any other questions, now's the time to get them in. I've got one that I wanted to get to. So we're going to drop that right now. Mark, name your dream team, three-person UFO investigative squad, living or dead. They don't have to be a UFO researcher. And I'm going to expand this. They can be anybody. And I'm going to expand this from the notes I sent you earlier. They can even be fictitious characters.
Well, I'm gonna stick with the original parameters of the question because I really like this team. I would love to see this happen. Unfortunately, it's not possible in our current realm. But here's the team. My dream investigative UFO team would be J. Allen Hynek, Stan Gordon, and Linda Moulton Howe. Could you imagine that trio as sort of getting the phone call and hopping in the van and going out and actively investigating? And I guess that's where that in my own mind, as I was trying to think that through, because there were various combinations that I was coming up with, but I wanted three people who really were active investigators, you know, who had vast experience actually going on site, interviewing witnesses, sort of being on call. And each one of those individuals fit the bill. And all three of them were able then to articulate what it is that they found. So it just seemed like a really cool group of people to throw together. But, I felt bad about excluding some, and I really wanted to find a way to put Micah Hanks in there.
Right.
Because just sitting and listening to him talk, it's like, well, of course he would be ideal to be in the field because he could immediately start connecting dots as soon as somebody starts talking. But it's pretty wild. That's a great question. I love that.
Well, now I'm going to curveball it at you again because we have a couple minutes left. Okay. You can travel through time and space. You can take this investigative team on the ground to any historical UFO case and investigate it either as it's happening or immediately after. Which one are you traveling to in this contrived and ridiculous scenario that I've concocted?
Well, I mean, it would have to be Roswell, right? Let's take them to Roswell. Let's get them there. On the night that it happens, before the stories change, let's get them to that precise moment and zap them there.
I want this to happen. So if any of our listeners, viewers, or aficionados of fan fiction, which I understand is a thing, feel free to write this up, have it on my desk by Monday. Well, folks, that brings us to the top of the hour. I have thoroughly enjoyed this. So thank you so much, Mark. It's always an honor to have you on here.
Oh, man, my pleasure entirely. That was a lot of fun.
Thank you. I have a feeling we'll find an excuse to do this again soon. But in the meantime, thank you to everybody for tuning in. Thank you for spending your Wednesday evening with us. Please come back next week, same time, same place for our next show. And keep an eye on this feed because there's a new episode of Bigfoot Beyond the Trail out for squad members right now. I knew there was something I forgot to mention. So check that out. If you are a squad member, you can watch that today. If you are not, you can join the squad or catch the world premiere on Sunday. With that, thank you all for being here, and we'll see you next time on STM Live.
presented by the Small Town Monsters Broadcasting Network. You can find out more about this and other network shows, as well as Small Town Monsters films, books, and Monster Fest 2 at smalltownmonsters.com.